My guest today, a peer and businesswoman, was once described in the Guardian headline as the convent girl who stormed the Bastille of FTSE top 100 boardrooms. Recently made chairman of the Financial Reporting Council, she's been chairman or deputy chairman in recent years of more businesses than I've space to list. She was head of John Major's policy unit when he was Prime Minister, and earlier the economics editor of The Independent newspaper, and has done all sorts of things in economic journalism, as well as serving a term as governor of the BBC. She's presented Channel 4 News, too. She is Sarah Hogg, properly speaking, Baroness Hogg of Kettlethorpe in the county of Lincolnshire, a person you can see of many parts. Lady Hogg, whom have you chosen as your great life, and why?
I've chosen Charlotte Guest, who is a great Victorian, of whom I had never heard until I joined the board of the Great British Engineering Company, GKN. And the G of GKN is the Guest family, and in particular, in my book, Charlotte Guest, who in the middle of the 19th century ran the biggest ironworks in the world, which meant the biggest manufacturing company in the world. And I chose her because I simply can't believe that her great achievements are so neglected.
I suspect I already know the answer to the question because she did so many different things, but it is her business achievements that first grabbed your attention.
Yes, and in fact, if one tries to find out about her, you find out much more about the other things she did.
You're yourself a relatively early example of a woman who broke the glass ceiling in the world of business, economics, finance. I'm sure you'd resist comparisons with the extraordinary woman that you've chosen, but you must at least admit that Charlotte Guest is a kind of inspiration to people like you.
Absolutely. And she had quite a complicated work-life balance too, because as well as learning about the business from her husband, first doing the accounts, then educating herself at a high level of technology in the processes behind the ironworks and the development from there on of what would become a great steelworks. She had 10 children in 13 years, some work-life balance. And even if she had a great Victorian householder to support her, just having 10 children in 13 years...
Think would be enough for most people.
Exactly.
Well, come on, I'm sure, to the range and depth of this woman's achievements. But first, Charlotte Guest was born in 1812 and died in 1895, so her life really virtually spanned the entire Victorian era. With me to explore that life is Revel Guest, her great-granddaughter and co-author of her biography, who incidentally was the first female producer-director on Panorama, horse breeder, columnist. She began her career as the youngest ever woman parliamentary candidate. She became a distinguished television producer and chair of the Hay Festival. Revel, your biography of your great-grandmother, Lady Charlotte Guest, An Extraordinary Life, kind of says it all. Your life too. Do you think the Guest spirit lives on in you?
Well, I hope it does. Certainly, any family that has somebody like her in the family is an inspiration to everyone there. And, you know, in very many different ways. She had so many different facets in her life. We've got people who are artists and painters and politicians and businesswomen.
Let's start from the beginning. And let me ask you, Revel, to tell us something about the circumstances of the family from which she came, into which she was born.
Well, the Earl of Lindsay was her father, who died when she was very young, and so she came from aristocratic background. They lived in a large house in Lincolnshire called Uffington. She never stopped working. Her hands were never idle, and she certainly influenced, I think, the way I was brought up. You did everything for everyone else.
Would it have been a strict upbringing that she had?
Yes, I think, very strict. But she was an emotional, intelligent girl. She longed to be educated, and girls were not educated in that time. Unfortunately for her, her stepfather was a very difficult man.
Her father died?
Her father died when she was very young. She had a tutor, or rather her brother had a tutor, and he was very important in her life. I think she fell madly in love with him. She was an emotional woman. Her early life was really quite sad, and she used to wander around the beautiful gardens and in the...
She hated
lime
indoors,
trees.
Didn't she?
She hated indoors, partly because she, from early age, she suffered from migraines. All her life she had terrible migraines. She started at 10 years old to write her diary. And I read every single word, handwritten word, of her diary.
I want to ask you more about the diary or journal in just a moment. But first ask Sarah Hogg, does the picture of the young Charlotte Guest, who is emerging, tally with the hero, so to speak, of the boardroom and the steelworks?
I feel so sorry for her. She grew up in what seems to me an amazingly dysfunctional aristocratic family, and she had the great good sense to marry trade in the shape of John Guest. And however much she hated indoors, she seems to have loved indoors at the ironworks. It's a wonderful account in Revel's book of how, after they've gone off on their honeymoon and they go down to Dowlais, where there's a fine Georgian house absolutely surrounded by the ironworks. And the first day he takes her into the ironworks and they go round and he explains everything to do with the ironworks, and she's fascinated by it and involved in all senses in those activities, because she did a lot of other things surrounding the works, got involved in the schools that they developed, which were leading edge, and adult education for women as well as men. And all this is enormously impressive. But again, if you read some accounts, it's as if she was a sort of Lady Bountiful, whereas she wasn't. She was really fully involved in the business as well. And at a time when women, married women, couldn't own property or sign a contract, there she was negotiating the contract at the most dramatic moment in the history of a 250-year-old engineering business, which was when Lord Bute, who owned the site on which this great ironworks at Dowlais was built, would only renew the lease on tremendously disadvantageous terms, which would have broken the business. And her husband by then was quite ill. She was doing a lot of the negotiation. Fortunately, Lord Bute died, and his executors renegotiated and the business went on.
Of which more in a moment. I want to return to this. I can tell that you're going to be, Sarah Hogg, drawing me sternly back to her achievements as an industrialist. And here I am filling my pretty little head with thoughts about her childhood and all that. But I am just fascinated by her childhood, Revel. Lots of successful men and women have some adult in their youth who has been an inspiration, either in terms of love and affection or in terms of education to them. With men, it's very often their mothers, and with women, it's quite often a father, though not necessarily so. Who was it with Charlotte? Was it the tutor she fell in love with, do you think?
Oh, it was the tutor, definitely. I mean, she taught herself. She was self-taught, and she was given these books by people who came to stay and who realised what an outstanding mind she had. And she read all of Scott and Waverley and a great deal of about the East. Arabian Nights was her favourite book. She loved moments which she loved there. She loved riding horses across the beautiful parks, and she loved... I mean, it wasn't all bad by any means.
I've got a quote here from her journal. "The riding is congenial, but not the parade, the driving about, visiting, the stupid evenings, the continual ennui." After dining at Lady Trollope's, you say in your book, when she was 15, she pronounced the ladies very missy and the evening extremely stupid.
That's exactly right. She uses this word extremely stupid, which I don't think meant quite what it does today. But she used
dull-witted,
it a lot.
Yes,
it was dull-witted,
yes.
And she hated going to London. It was only when she came out, which she didn't like doing very much, that she met Disraeli, and she was fascinated by him and he fascinated by her.
But that's a wonderful might have been, hadn't it?
It's a wonderful might have been. Put a stop to, because they feared that might be something in the blood of the family, since her brother was a simpleton, and that was why it never happened.
Was there any adult in your life, a father, mother, or some other person, Sarah, whom, when you were a girl, inspired you and gave you confidence in yourself?
Both my parents did. Probably my mother the most, because she fought to the death my desire to leave school at the age of 16 and bullied me into staying at school and going on and having a career. She never quite, I think, though, worked out what having a career was all about. Because when I was working in Downing Street, which was, as you know, Matthew, a pretty 24/7 sort of job, she always used to ring me up at 6 o'clock in the evening for a little chat. And as you know, 6 p.m. is about the worst possible yes. time, because some minister or other will always have agreed to go on the Today programme and have been ringing up begging for some more public spending to announce. And so one evening, obviously the strain in my voice began to show a bit, because my mother started apologising. She said, "I'm so sorry to bother you, darling. I would have rung your brother, only he's at work."
That's a great story. You're listening to Great Lives on BBC Radio 4. I'm Matthew Paris. Lady Sarah Hogg has chosen Lady Charlotte Guest, and here to help us find out more about this Victorian superwoman is her great-granddaughter, Revel Guest. Do we have any idea what she looked like? Are the portraits of her, Revel, thought to be accurate? Do they look like each other?
I don't think she was very beautiful, but she did say at one time that, you know, surprisingly, somebody called me beautiful. I think she had these big eyes, which set her apart, and she was fun and full of anecdotes and interesting to talk to, but a great beauty she was not.
The diary, as you say, she does come across as quite emotional in many ways. It is at the same time an important factual journal, but it's also quite intimate.
Well, she was, I think, very emotional, and there were several people in her life that she had a very strong affection for. I mean, I've read every word, and I think on the whole, I know her better than, or I knew her, because my memory now is not so good about it, but I knew her better than probably any living person.
Did she write every day?
She wrote every day.
So how many pages does it all come to?
Well, there are 17 and a half volumes.
Good Lord.
Yeah. But she never had an idle moment, so she would start at 5 in the morning and she'd run the house, because that's what her house when she was, both when she was married to Martha, and also when she was a child, she was the eldest child, and her mother was sickly, so she ran that too.
Can I propose we hear an extract from her journal, maybe the extract that you quote in your book, Revel, written in 1839. I wonder, Sarah Hogg, if you would read this for us.
It's a great quote. "But whatever I undertake, I must reach an eminence in. I cannot endure anything in a second grade. I am happy to see we are at the head of the iron trade. Otherwise I could not take pride in my house in the city and my works at Dowlis, and glory playfully in being, in some sort, a tradeswoman. Then again, my blood is of the noblest and most princely in the kingdom, and if I go into society, it must be the very best and first. I can brook no other. If I occupy myself in writing, my book must be splendidly got up and must be, as far as decoration and topography are concerned, at the head of literature."
I'm fascinated, Sarah, by her description of herself as a tradeswoman. It's curiously bracketed, after which she says, "in some sort." Is she proud of being a tradeswoman, or a bit ashamed of it? How would that have been seen in her own society?
Well, in her own society, it would have been seen as something to be certainly somewhat ashamed of. But she was very proud of not being ashamed of it. I read with fascination an account of her ticking off the businessmen of South Wales who, once they'd made their money, tried to posh themselves up and distance themselves from trade. She greatly disapproved of that. And indeed, given it was one of the phenomena in late 19th century society, which I think was damaging to our industrial development, how right she was.
She got into trade, as she puts it, through marriage. She married John Guest in 1833 when she was 21 and he was 48, I think.
That's right.
And did she, by marrying, as it were, into trade, did she slightly marry beneath her?
Well, she married into a different society. I mean, I would never, even in historical terms, call it beneath her, but she married an extraordinary man, because he himself was outstanding in his understanding of manufacturing. And she learned a great deal from him. And because it was in her nature to throw herself into any field of life, she immediately learned everything she could about the industry, and she had people teach her exactly or the method of producing the iron rails.
And this was presumably before her husband died, so it wasn't a matter of being pitched into it because her husband had died. She pitched herself, Sarah, straight into the the iron and steel business.
Enormously, and when he got ill, you can see her trying to tread that fine line between taking over too much from him or too little. But, of course, it was such a critical time in the life of the business that when he died, she had an awful lot to do to not lose the company but seize the opportunity.
How did everybody take to a woman in this position? How did the other ironmasters take to it? It must have seemed bizarre.
Extraordinary, I think. But you make the point, Rebel, don't you, that probably if she'd been born just a bit later, it would have been even harder because the full suffocation, if you like, of the Victorian system of family life would have been further wrapped around her. And the fact that she grew up in the Regency period when things were still a bit all over the place and people did a bit more what they wanted to was her good fortune.
I think that's right. I mean, she would have been considered today very left wing. She wanted to look after people, she wanted to better their lives. There's a story of a little boy aged 9 who's underground, and children were not supposed to be underground, and so she insisted that he was brought up and never happened again. She wanted to educate the people, and she did this because not because she thought it was the right thing to do, but she really felt intensely, strongly that life was unfair.
And this she did by starting a series of schools.
She started schools. They went on a trip to Germany and saw all the German schools. And she came back with these ideas. And so she not only started schools for the young, but she started schools for the adults, the men and the women, and she taught them herself and took classes quite often.
I'm just trying to imagine the board meetings, if they had board meetings in those days. How did the gentlemen take it? Did they smoke in her presence? And when there were dinners and the ladies and the gentlemen separated after dinner, did she go off with the ladies fuming, presumably?
or the accounts of her talking to effectively the shop stewards. Those, I think, are wonderful, in that she seems to have engaged their sympathy and that they saw her as a woman carrying very heavy burdens, which was obviously, apart from anything else, I should think, a great negotiating technique. Because, you know, she did resist and break a number of strikes.
She did use her femininity like another lady politician whom we know.
I get that feeling. Is that so?
I don't think she used her femininity, no. I think she was very feminine, but I think she wouldn't have done that. She kept her sadness, her emotions very much to herself, and you really got to read between the lines to sort of guess what was really going on.
What was her factory actually producing at this time?
The wherewithal of the railway expansion
of course,
the world.
Yes.
You know, enormous quantity of material for railway development. Steel, I think that they took delivery of the full capital plant to develop steel just after she'd stood down, but clearly she'd done all the
development. Well, they had the Bessemer.
Yeah, exactly.
So she didn't just take over the company, she grew the company.
Absolutely. Mm. Because they'd been running it down in the late 1840s because of the problem of the lease, that they thought they'd have to close it down. That would have been the end of GKM.
And at this time, Revel, that she's also learning Welsh and becoming completely proficient in
the
language.
Well, she learned Welsh much earlier. She learned Welsh immediately she got there.
Hmm.
And she actually translated the Mabinogion.
What's that called again?
The Mabinogion.
Yes.
Which is kind of the Bible for Welsh people.
What is it?
It's a wonderful collection of tales, myths. It's sort of mostly 13th, 14th century, and very much aligned with King Arthur, the tales of King Arthur. And she did that while she was having her 10 children. And the book was published just after the last one, Blanche, was born. So it was a considerable feat, which you know, I have enormous respect for.
What do you think of this work-life balance, Sarah?
The word balance is difficult. It's certainly terrific on all aspects. And some people are inclined to say, all right, well, she had a great household, so, you know, all her time was her own. But I don't think that does as an explanation. I think it's phenomenal, this search for excellence in everything she did.
I ask this question with hesitation because Sarah will probably throw a book at me, but was she in fact a good mother?
Oh, I think she was a very good mother. I mean, she had the children pretty easily. I mean, there's one story, which I don't think is in the book, that she was entertaining some people that she probably found exceedingly stupid at a big dinner, And she had to leave in the middle, and she said, I'll be back in a minute. She went up and had a child and came down and went on with the dinner. I mean, she was, she never complained. I mean, it's impossible to have children without pain. So, you know, she clearly didn't talk about it.
After the 10th, she was a little ill, wasn't
yes,
she?
Yes, after the 10th, she was quite a lot ill, actually.
Can you even imagine bearing 10 children and doing anything else in your life?
Absolutely not.
The fathering them would be hard enough work. Let's keep the philanthropy in proportion, though, Revel. Sanitation in workers' houses in her steelworks was pretty awful at this time, and there were terrible outbreaks of cholera from which, of course, she and her family could escape. She wasn't in every sense. You described her as someone who might have been left-wing today. Is that a completely correct description?
Well, you know, she lived in that time.
Yes.
And you can't judge her by today. You can only judge her by that time in which she lived. And I think she did more than anyone else in that position to try and better the state of the workers. But no, I mean, the state of the workers was bad.
We should mention that her husband became a Member of Parliament himself. I think he was the first Member of Parliament for Merthyr. He must have been more on her wavelength, Sarah, than the average Victorian husband might have been at that time. She must have been allowed more latitude by this marriage than most marriages would have allowed.
Well, he loved his business, and I think involving her in his business gave both of them huge pleasure. These wonderful accounts of rushing out to the ironworks the minute she got the chance, or the moment they got there, and that a great outing for the children would be a quick walk through the ironworks. You know, so there was none of this shunning of the activity or moving your house a long way away from the ironworks, which was a slightly later phenomenon of the Industrial Revolution. They wanted to be there. They enjoyed being next
and
to
it. And she went underground. I mean, she did
yes.
things that women never did at that stage. And I think
it wasn't
yes,
legal for women to work underground at that stage, was it? But she could
go
down as a visitor.
She did it because she was the owner's wife. But I think it should be said that, you know, he really was outstanding as well, and I always feel it's a little hard on him because she's so much better known than he. I think he needed her very badly because she was enormously important to the success of the company and did most of the work for him and also wrote all the letters and gave him advice. But I don't think that she would have taken any notice of a more strict husband that really treated her like a second-rate citizen, because she was a rebel. She did what she wanted.
Did her husband die young, Revel, or was it just that he was so much older than her that she was still quite young when he died?
Well, he was older than her, and inevitably was going to die earlier, but he died of nasty gallstones and very painfully.
When?
In 1852.
How did it happen that she took over the steelworks? It wouldn't have been assumed. That mustn't be very common for Victorian male industrialists to die and their wives never took over. Why did she?
Well, the children were too young, and
yeah.
she was determined to grow it, preserve it, create a bigger company for those 10 children.
Well, she knew much more than anyone else about it. She was the obvious. I mean, there was no one else, and she was the obvious choice.
How easy have you found it, Sarah, to run a fairly high-flying business career yourself, and you have a husband who is a successful politician and children, running all those things together? How?
I think being lucky that having a husband who wanted me to do that. I think if there isn't alignment in what you both want to do and that what you want the other to do, then there's
strain. Right.
How did your father-in-law, Quentin Hogg, or Viscount Hailsham, take to his daughter's developing a very separate career? He was, after all, from a very different age.
Oh, he was very funny. If my career was going well, I mean, I've always used my married name at work, and so if my work was going well, he'd always pretend I was his daughter, and if it wasn't going so well, suddenly I was his daughter-in-law.
Well, I hope you were the daughter more than the daughter.
She married again, Revel, after her husband's death. To whom?
Well, she is a strange race, like circles in her life, because her first love was the tutor of her brother, and then she fell for the tutor of her son.
This time much younger.
Much younger this time, and also chosen by the man she really disliked quite intensely, was her stepfather. He was quite different, and when she married him, her life changed completely, and her sort of passion for Wales, it didn't disappear, but it kind of was taken over by her passion for what she was doing with all the tenants and the farming community around Canford.
And his name was Charles Schreiber.
Charles Schreiber.
You mentioned Canford. Where was this?
Canford was in Dorset, and it was a famous house which she searched all over England wanting to create a dynasty because she believed in roots for her children, her 10 children. And eventually she'd much rather have had a house in Wales, but she couldn't find one. So she eventually, they settled on Canford, which they bought for a lot of money in those days. It was 350,000, a huge sum of money. And it was one of the most beautiful houses in fabulous land. And she then became absorbed in matters of the countryside. So she was a country lady, and then of course when they went to London, her son, when he was 21, lived in the house, and you know she had to leave the house. She suddenly, with her children all pretty well grown up, had a life of her own, and she and Charles Schreiber spent years and went, I think it was 50 times to the continent, galloping about as fast as they could in carriages and the few trains that were there, collecting ceramics. It's a very considerable collection, which is, as you know, in the V&A under the name of Schreiber.
It's as though, Sarah, her life falls into two parts, and she lives the sort of life that might have been expected of a Victorian lady post-40, and pre-40 lives a completely revolutionary life.
Extraordinary.
Yes.
But I think it is this ability to pour herself into anything. But I still just come back to that vivid picture of her first entering an ironworks,
yeah,
which must have been so far from anything she'd ever seen or done.
Mm.
And this love affair with industry and business combined with the love affair with her husband, that produced this extraordinary flowering of commercial talent.
My thanks to Baroness Sarah Hogg for choosing Lady Charlotte Guest as her great life, and to Revel Guest for offering us her expert knowledge and insight. Goodbye.